Don't Give Up Your Day Job, a local musician's guide by me, Paul Gillings. An educational and sometimes humorous look at what it's like to be part of the local music scene. Hello, here we are again. Not giving up our day jobs on my podcast, Don't Give Up Your Day Job, the local musician's guide. Now, one of my favourite parts of any local music scene, and my local music scene in particular, is the all-dayer. The all-day music festival, usually held in back room of pub garden. Not even the big festivals like a field or anything, as you know, maybe the back of a trailer down the local park or something like that. But an all-day music festival with all the local bands, all the original bands, all the guys going about. You get to see what's going on and get a whole influx of music. And I have to say that some of the best, in my opinion, or the best music all-day festivals in our particular town of Lowestoft has been organised by the man sitting opposite me and with me today, Mr. Darren Steger-Lewis. Hello, Darren.
Hello, how are you?
Ah, and his microphone works and everything.
I know, fabulous. Look at that.
Oh, what have
look
I
at
done?
20 minutes in, tech sorted, beers open, let's go.
Darren, thanks for finally getting together with us. I mean, I've been mucking you about on the calendar, on the diaries.
Yeah, the diaries haven't quite synced up, have they? But here we are. Here
yes, we are.
My timing's never been particularly good, truth told, more on a musical basis. But
we'll talk about your band experience.
Do we
in a
have
moment.
To? Do we have to? Can we just stick with the events, like the successes? Should we just talk about?
Because you don't just do all day festivals, do you? You're a man of many hats.
They're all very very badly fitting hats, but I'm trying them all on.
So what have you done before we get on to sort of what you're up to at the moment? So you've organised the all day festivals, which we'll get to in a moment about what the trials and tribulations and joy and pain of that is.
Yeah.
And let me get this right. You're also a DJ, two kinds of DJ.
Yeah, I'm a live alternative DJ and a radio DJ of sorts. I'm on hiatus at the moment. I've previously been on a couple of radio stations, but on hiatus with that at the moment.
That was with Smart Radio. Neil Jones. We've had a chat with him before in here.
Yes. Yeah. Before that, I was with Blythe Valley Radio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Down in Southwold, that was.
Oh, really? Did they know who you were?
Genuinely, they wouldn't have let me on. But I do have a fun little story to tell about that one.
But you also play a bit of guitar and bass and been in bands doing that too?
I've been doing that, singing a little bit. That's kind of a career of probably more of a pastime, a hobby now. Mm. Musically. I've done some bits.
Done some bits. He's playing it down.
Done what I needed to do.
But all over it strikes me that you are a complete audiophile, a complete music lover, isn't it?
Oh, genuinely, the local scene in particular has always been something that's kind of I've grown up through. Mm. I've been growing up surrounded by, for me, social events are music. Hobbies are music. Pastimes, sitting at home, passing time is music.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's all, everything kind of links back to that. Mm. Driving your car, there's got to be music. It's it's one of those things that it's kind of engulfed my life.
Yeah.
And so everything I've done has kind of orientated around that.
I always feel jealous because I sometimes think I don't love music that much because I do love me silence and I do love to get crowds too much and stuff.
You're getting old, aren't you? That's the Paul. I mean, I know our avid listener can't see you, but you've got your slippers.
I know,
and a cup of Horlicks.
He's got beers. I've got. Horlicks.
He said to me when I got here that I've got half an hour because he needs to have a snooze.
I'm usually in my PJs at this time, and that's not
I'm disappointed
joke.
That you're not. I'm disappointed that you're not.
I walk in the door, get straight in the pyjamas. Ask my wife and kid on the way out. Honestly, man. But Darren, how do we? I know the memories are sketchy because you're not that million years younger than me. But it was a long time ago. We haven't known each other for an awful long time. And if I share my story of how I met you, or my first memories of you, is that you ran a pub. And you had green hair, and you were—I thought you were the coolest man in the world. I thought you were punk. So the pub was the Royal Standard, down on Denmark Road, and right in slap bang in the middle of Lowestoft. And my band, the Harbin Blues Band,
yeah,
you hired us.
I did.
To do a couple of gigs.
Yes.
And we had a cracking time. Nobody turned up to see us because we didn't promote it. But we still had a great time in your pub, and you had a purpose-built stage and a PA and everything and lovely. So when, because I think I recall that you probably saw me, because I can't meet every member of the audience.
Not in those sort of crowds, you know.
So it's playing in the brewery with Nexus.
Either supporting or they were supporting you without a clue.
Yes, without a clue.
Yeah, so I was a mere 13 years old. I was drinking brewery shandies. Now, if anyone remembers the brewery, the shandies weren't shandies at all. It was a Tops.
They used to do an excellent pint of diesel in there.
Yeah.
Snake bite and black.
But they basically made their shandies out of the strongest ale with a dash of lemonade. So a little 13-year-old me was on them. I'm sure they
didn't. How did you even get in and get served at that?
We were with, I was best friends with Tom, who is Chris Garrod's brother.
Oh, yeah.
Who was in Without a Clue. And so his parents took us along. And I don't know where these pints were coming from. I'm assuming it was his dad. Tom's dad was
past the blame. Yeah.
And I mean, it was literally probably was a pint. I probably had a pint.
That 13 years old. That would have got me absolutely annihilated.
And so my memory of that is hazy, and also the fact it was 22 years ago. Probably contributes to an element of the haziness.
We're definitely also just not condoning teenage drinking whatsoever.
Completely wrong nowadays.
Music and the beer was secondary. If any of our daughters decide they would get 13 hours, we'll kill you.
Yes. Times have changed, my darling. Times have changed. But no, so I was watching Without a Clue play, or like I said, I can't remember the order. And then
that was always a controversial point between those two particular bands, who was going to support who.
Yeah, I think it turned into a split headline, didn't it, more than anything. But I remember
it turned into a split ego, is what it did.
I just remember this kind of skinny, long haired thing on stage.
God, skinny. Jesus, I wish.
And, I don't remember you personally. Sure. I just remember this front man and this kind of this singer. Mm. And it wasn't until many years later, even post the Royal Standard when you played at Harpoon.
Really?
It wasn't until you joined the Jam Master Sir Matthew band that I didn't twig who you were.
So literally 5-6 years ago, you suddenly went, oh, yeah, that's him.
Genuinely took that one. It was Jam Master said to me.
I do look quite different, to be fair. Yeah.
Jam Master said to me, oh, yeah, that's Paul, who was in Nexus. I'm like, because you two were like the sticker bands.
Right.
You walked anywhere in Lowestoft and there was either a Nexus sticker or Without a Clue sticker on every lamppost.
Some of us might have actually worked at a self-adhesive vinyl graphics company local to the area.
Hence why Without Clue's minis were plastered with big vinyls. Is that why?
Yes, yeah. It was.
Because they got them cheap, or you went in after hours.
I did not get them cheap at all. I never bought one in my entire life. They were made from, there was like really great scraps of vinyl that you could get, and I made them some from Riff. Reflective vinyl. I was a bit naughty, really, and it was one of the sort of early forays into just promoting stuff, and it obviously really worked because everyone
genuinely
saw
it. Did.
But we were making that place down there still does make stuff for police cars and stuff like that.
Really?
So all the reflective vinyl, special vehicle operations made vinyl. So I would then get the offcuts, cut the word Nexus out I think so, like American Bold or whatever it was, and then just give them to bods to stick on their cars. They're all everywhere. And even in one point, our guitarist, old Matt Coe, bless him, was just sticking them on random people's cars in Tesco car park just to promote the band.
So did the Nexus, the sticker, the lamppost sticker, did that have like an eye or something on it? Was it?
Yes.
Green,
that was another one.
Green and
white. So I had a bunch of square ones that were the same as the EP cover.
Yes.
So I took the EP cover and then printed it on some white vinyl. And then I cut all those out with my fair hand.
Did you?
A pair of scissors. Yes, wow. So I cut all of those before the days of auto cut on those kind of machines. Yeah. So good promo. So from 1999 was Nexus, mate. How about that?
Was that when it was?
Yeah.
Yes. I was younger than 13. I won't disclose my age for the previous owners of the brewery's integrity of how old I was drinking alcohol in their establishment.
Well, the place is rubble. Now,
true,
isn't it?
True.
So the place is rubble.
No, I mean, I must have been like 12, 11 and a half, 12. I even got in.
Because they used to run all day. Is it a brewery? Is that where you got the idea, or was it something else that you got the idea to run these all days? Tell me about where they started and what made you think, do you know what? I've got nothing to do and I like my life too much. I'm going to fill it up by dealing with a whole bunch of ungrateful bands. to put music on for a whole day. It's for charity, though. Like, I just want to put that out there, first and foremost of all. You do all of these things for charity. You did K-Fest for how many years?
K-Fest, I was actually only involved in it for about 5 years.
It's still 5 years. And then you've done Carfest for 7 years. And it's all for charity.
Yeah.
It is all for charity. And that is a wonderful thing to do. It's
when you haven't got a budget...
or just say it's for charity. No, it's genuinely for charity. It's not like get everyone to put in a pot and you just walk off with it, is it? It goes to a charitable institution. So why did you start your first
all-day? So I used to go to the all-days at the brewery, and I remember them well. First one I played was one called Amplified. I remember that because it was a friend of mine.
So you gigged at that, did you?
I played it in my second band, Ugly Feet. Which was? Ugly Feet.
Ugly Feet, okay. Yeah.
And then... that kind of my friend organised that, and it kind of got a bit of a bug in me for putting on some events. And we decided as a band to put on a little bit of a regular, maybe a monthly night where we played, but it also had other bands on the bill. And the idea came, it was at Seabreeze we organised, and it was called The Road to Deliverance, eventually shortened to Deliverance. And
after
I used to
the 1970s hillbilly film,
genuinely don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why we called
You've
it that.
Never seen that film.
No.
Wow.
But what happened was I used to make the flyers, because these are the days we used to go downtown and hand flyers out.
Well, stickers on lampposts.
But I some rabbit hole I went down on Google image search, found loads of like road images where like the road goes off in the distance and you see the horizon. And this Road to Deliverance thing appeared in my head, and I thought, we're going to call it that. Mm. And each flyer was a different. It was either a pathway or a railway, and then all the text over it.
Because you're quite good at your graphic design.
I wasn't.
I was going to say, but it sounds like that's the roots of it. I think there's a missing career there. No. Mate. Well, even the posters you do nowadays are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that's definitely a forced talent. Right. In that, used to have a friend of mine, Carl Prettyman, who was a graphic designer. Mm. He was, I think he used to manage 6 Degrees of Separation.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So he was a contact that we knew who was a graphic designer, and he started designing posters. Mm. And I got fed up with myself having to ask him, because he started organising the Halloween on Fire events.
Mm.
And doing the posters for them.
Another festival that you organised.
Which
as well.
I took kind of inherited. Yeah. And I kept having to ask him for the poster, even though he wasn't involved in the event anymore.
So it was out of necessity. It's like, I'll do my own then.
Genuinely, the first one we did was a rip-off of the first poster I designed was a rip-off of the first Carlfest poster. Mm. I took the background. I emailed him and said, can you send me the background?
Yeah.
He sent me the background. I'd done all the text on it. Huh. And I was like, right, I can do this.
Yeah.
I haven't got any software. My laptop is slow as anything.
Right.
But I can do this.
Well, I think sometimes the constraints, and as a graphic designer myself, the constraints of the medium that you're dealing with can force creativity.
Yes.
And you've been doing those posters and graphic and promos for such a long time now that and they look awesome. They really
Thank
do,
you.
Man.
Thank you.
What are you using these days then for that?
A really slow computer and some awful software. It's a free software called Pixlr.
Oh, yeah.
It's like PIXLR.
I've heard of that. Yeah, we were talking about Canva
and
the other day.
It's very basic. It's a very basic Photoshop software.
Yeah,
but
I think
what
it's,
I need, it probably takes
open
twice
source,
as long.
I think, is what it is. It's Linux or something. I think someone will correct me. But,
it takes twice as long to do if I was
so
doing Photoshop.
So you weren't like... you talked to me about early days of posters and we're cutting pictures and letters out of magazines.
No, I'm not.
And then someone snicking into work.
Digital technology
existed. Copying them on the sly.
Digital technology did exist by the time
I forget you're talking to somebody old. You're all about that to start with, and then you start bringing Google image search. I mean, my God, I don't remember seeing that until I was in my 20s.
Well, this was what, mid-noughties, this must have been. And so, we started this monthly night of a Seabreeze. It was about three bands, and we had no budget. We had a really, really crap PA, just a real low-budget PA.
Yeah.
And we played the first couple, and then after that, we, as a band, we kind of split up, withered away, and I carried on organising these nights. And like I said, without a budget, it was like, how am I going to get these bands to play? Mm. So what I did was I took the flyer and then turned it into a ticket, and we sold tickets.
Okay,
and I had 50 tickets.
Mm.
I gave each of the bands that played 50 tickets. Now, luckily, no one sold all the tickets, because that was 200 200 people would have turned up to Seabreeze. Can you imagine it?
Yeah,
upstairs
yeah.
in the Seabreeze. Oh, the floor would have gone in.
No, I mean, that was a fairly but sprung, silly old floor as it went.
What
anyway.
I relied on was the kind of the laissez-faire attitude of the bands, the apathy, yeah. that yeah. they weren't actually going
to say. I was going to say, you know, and I was thinking as you were saying it, so you gave how many tickets to the bands? I mean, there's no way.
They had a price on them of £3 a ticket. Right. So they could have made 150 quid.
So well, that would mean doing something.
I gave them the tickets and went, look, sell them, 150 quid in your pocket.
We talked about this
gig.
When you first came in. We said about bands being great at their music and being involved in the music, but not always good at the promo. And this sort of recurring theme promo versus which musicians in the bands that are driving force. And you were a very gregarious character, and you like to talk to people, and you like to engage and stuff like that. And I can't see that. I couldn't have seen that being a problem for you. Like, so come see my band.
I sold best part of 100 tickets every single time. But no, I had my 50 tickets. I always sold 20 to 30 of my tickets. So I'd make a bit of money back for myself. Mm. Gave the bands their tickets. That was to me and to them an agreement. Mm. Sell them, that's your payment. They're like, nice one. Thinking, got to sell all 50.
Well, they're not entrepreneurs. They're just so musicians.
I put on these nights and it was a good run of shows, actually. Mm. I mean, it was typical Seabreeze shows. Do you know what I mean?
So just the Seabreeze, for the uninitiated, was a club down. It's not a seedy road, I think but it's a seedy road called Commercial Road. Yeah. And there was a pub with a club upstairs.
Yeah, it was a social club downstairs, wasn't it? Yeah, like a
dart boards and stuff like that.
Yeah, they used to have like the working men's kind of acts coming in.
So it's near the port. And I mean, lowest off that year's where you come in on a port, it's near the bridge there. I would say it's very, very sailory and offshorey, but it wasn't really,
was it? The thing is, it was about 5-6 doors down from the metro, which was like the youth club down
that's
that
right
road.
And we've talked about that on the show
and
before
that,
yeah.
that because it was so close, I think the two almost intertwined with each other, so this upstairs space that was it's all done out with like crab nets and lobster things and lifeboat rings, and it was all nautically themed.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know why that I remember that, because I can barely remember being in there. But I just had this stage at the end, which was much bigger than the stage downstairs, if I remember. It was like a little corner stage downstairs.
Great system up there. Yeah, great. Like we say, the floor was very, very bouncy, very dodgy, and dipped in the middle.
It was,
and that floor is kind of infamous because I saw a couple of quite heavy bands there. Burn the Headlines, I do believe, or something like that. My mate Paul was supporting him when he was in Jade, and I'd gone along for moral support and helped carry that massive Marshall stack that stands over in the corner now.
Yes.
And there were some people. The mosh pit there was kind of terrifying, not just because you get an elbow to the snake, but because you might actually fall through the floor.
And you had the rafters at the top, so people were like monkey barring on the rafters.
I didn't see
top.
Any of that going on. Oh, my God, no, that would have made it worse.
And then when you were loading in, it was on that side staircase.
Yes.
Three flights of stairs. More stairs than were necessary for how high up it was.
It was like some really rubbish, like New York tenement stairs, wasn't it? Out of a film. I expected a slide up kind of ladder or something that to it.
But that venue, that's got a kind of a place in my heart, and that's where I started things.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that finished, I mean, what was that? That must have been about 2008 I was doing that, and then I didn't really do anything for quite a while. It was about 2 years. 2 years I kind of fell off the scene.
Was that when you were running the pub? Because that can take up a whole
no, that was
time,
2012.
It? Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Yeah, no. Okay. So it was a couple of years, and then I drifted away from the scene and was in a relationship that subsequently ended, and then was kind of get back out there, see what's going on.
Yeah.
So I hadn't done anything musically for a couple of years, and that's when I started sort of hanging around with Lindsay Moore and the like.
Cool.
And kind of got involved in the whole K-Fest vibe.
Obviously that
was something that had been going for a couple of years up until that point.
By the time I came along with the Harpoon Blues Band, you were running that. It was superb. I mean, there was t-shirts with the band names on. I've still got the ones with the Harpoons on. I mean, you had open sided trailer down on the pier, and just a massive, lovely sound system. It was so well attended as well. Yeah. It was legendary.
So that was kind of the first. I didn't do a major amount of organising. Lynn's was definitely the runner of that. She was on the book the bands, and she was, I was definitely more in a supporting role. And then on the day, I. I took over the comparing deals, because we used to have Kate used to do the comparing earlier in the day, and then when she left, it was like, right, we need someone to go and shout on stage.
Yeah, I do think that's a total necessary part of these things, because I've done a few festivals, even lately, and they don't have an MC. But for me, that was like, because early on at Glastonbury when I was a kid, you'd always have somebody who would maybe tell a joke, maybe ask you to do, and just fill time while everyone's going around behind the curtain. It's kind of almost theatre,
well,
right?
Well, I'm glad that you say that, because... obviously, I've got... This year was supposed to be my year out of doing anything. And I failed.
You crazy, crazy fool.
I kind of failed.
Well, Jubilee, did you wanted to please Her Majesty? Is that what it was?
Yeah, that was old Queenie rung.
Organised the Red Dan the Mariners.
Yeah. So I got... You know, I've kind of wanted to do something. I've done something. I've organised it. And I'm thinking, you know, on this all day, do I compare or not? Because it's very much... I'm someone who I think my reputation is someone who's quite arrogant and a bit overconfident. Maybe cocky would be the word.
I wouldn't say that.
I'd say you're
I'd say you're gregarious is what I say. But it comes across that. But I know you on a personal level.
Yeah,
and I know that from years of knowing you that isn't.
Yeah,
how you
my
really
concern
are.
Is that I will be interpreted as that. So I don't want to be. Oh, here's Darren.
I think that's great. I don't think a compare can be too cocky. You need that big personality. If you go back to walk between bands, I played a festival in Colchester last year in the middle of the park, and it was on a trailer side, and the bands were not introduced one between one and the other. You kind of awkwardly finished your set, and then you awkwardly packed up your gear and walked off. The next band walked on, and it was kind of really, people are looking at each other and stuff like that. And it's happened to quite a few festivals I've been to, and I don't know if it's a dying art, you know, or if it's a thing, but I think it's fabulous and necessary.
Yeah,
it keeps the flow of the day. It gives you, tells you what's going on. So where's the poster? Who's on next? What's going on?
This is it for me. It's the, especially for charity events.
Yeah,
you need someone who's going to go, this is why
put
we're
some
here.
Money in a bucket.
Can you put some? Because the amount of bands I say, well, just mention a bit of the fundraising bit,
yeah.
And then so before their last song, put the money in a bucket, like in the way that. Bands when they talk between songs you can't
who
understand.
Mostly don't do
it's the
that.
Same as the wedding DJ.
I mean the amount of bands I've been in where people don't like, are you going to introduce, we have this whole conversation, who's going to introduce the songs? Well, the front man, come on, be a front man, introduce the songs, talk up your band members, tell us who you are, tell us what you're going on. Instead it's kind of like,
we're so and so, we're going to play some
sometimes
songs.
Not even that, just playing rock out.
Yeah.
Is that some sort of hangover from the 90s shoegazing? Is it just, again, they focus too much on the music? I'm very glad that you did that, mate.
No. Like I say, so comparing, that was kind of the MC inside. That was the first experience of it with K-Fest, and it was basically when I can't remember why I got roped into it, but it was, I think I was drunk enough to do it. and so then I took on that role for a couple of years. It helped with organising kind of in the background. And then obviously subsequently me and Lynn split up and I stepped away from that. It was almost like, you know, with the kids, that was easy. When me and Lynn split up, we had the kids and then it was very much like, I'll have a couple of days a week, this and that. The more difficult bit was splitting the festivals between us.
Right. So which one's going to do Halloween on fire?
Exactly.
You had both of those each end of the year, didn't you?
We had K-Fest, Carl Fest and Halloween on fire.
And
then there was also the Easter and the Christmas Care and Real Loving events. And I was like, well, who's going to do what?
Jesus.
So Lynn's took K-Fest and Halloween.
Yeah.
I took the Carl Fest and the Easter and the Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and we raised them and we grew them. I then subsequently dipped back into Halloween on Fire at a later date.
Halloween on Fire was an interesting one, because I remember being invited to play it, and at the time I was in a band that were very much like, well, you know, I would go to them, and I was the driving force of getting gigs and stuff like that. And I would say we've been offered this gig. As a band member, you go, we've been offered this gig. We're always whinging, we haven't got any gigs, we've been offered this gig. How much? Says the drummer. Well, yeah, we'll want some petrol money, says the bass player. And you go, well, it's a charity gig. Well, I've already done two charity gigs this year, we ain't doing any more. It's like, well, that's charitable, that's lovely.
I mean, you're a regular Lenny Henry there.
Yeah, absolutely. So then I, after saying, yes, please, thank you, that's awesome, and I'm not in it for the money anyway, have to then go back to people like yourself, trying to do good things, trying to get bands for nothing, and genuinely trying to do stuff for charity, and give us a platform for our music is the other thing as well, which is really good for, and go, yeah, yeah, sorry, mate, my mum's ill, or some lame-ass excuse, you know. So, but bands, take any opportunity you can to play is what I say. You know, the scene being as thin on the ground as it is, I wanted to play all the time. I didn't care if there was money or anyone watching or anything.
I mean, ultimately, that's why I never, my demands are never too high with any event I organise. It's, you know, with this Jubilee event that you're playing, you and Danny are playing,
yeah.
I pop you a message. Any chance you can do a 45-minute set at some point on that day?
Yeah, yeah.
Come back to me. Let me know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a 45-minute set. I'm providing you with all the equipment.
Mm.
You literally have to turn up. Yep. You have to turn up with your heart. Danny and his guitar.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
It's in a lovely pub. I'm probably going to have a few ales.
Yeah.
It might not be bad.
And you won't even have to pay for them. You know what I mean? That's the thing. Look, we're sorting out some beers. Yeah, yeah. You haven't got to lug any gear about.
Sure.
You plug in, you play 45 minutes. So you could even do that and then go do your paid gig later in the day if you
need to. Well, the thing is about those all-dayers as well, as you get to meet, and what I like about them, so many things I like about them, but is that it's a whole event where you get to see how the rest of it's like a snapshot of the whole music scene.
Yeah.
So on that night, you've got like Optimists, great band, you've got a whole bunch of guys who are on the scene at the same time as me, and I get to meet and greet these people if I haven't before, and you know, see what the competition's like, you know, make some new friends, learn about some new music, and spend the afternoon down a pub. I mean, I asked you for a time on this particular one, and I don't normally, but we've got, what the hell is happening that day? That's right, I'm doing a video shoot with Coral Cross.
Right, yes, that's yes, what, you that's
mention
why it, yeah.
To, that's why I had to ask. And that's the other thing that one other band I was in used to get funny about. He's on the beers, it's all right.
I think, how do I cover that noise?
Just go for it, mate. It's a music podcast. Get a beers. So they would then, it would then be about what time slot deal with, what times you want to put us on. Well, as we're a band that nobody's heard of and doesn't have a following, it'll probably be early. Oh, what a good slot.
Yeah.
Well, it's a charity event. Do you have a lot of wrangling for better slots? What are the tactics that people pull from? Or am I just going to the worst denominator and I'm just thinking of people when they're not actually there, they're just doing it purpose?
Back when I started, I mean, Carl Fest, let's talk Carl Fest, because obviously that's something probably I'm most known for over the last so.
What is Carl Fest
Carl Fest is the Care and Real Love and Charity Music Festival. Mm-hmm. My friend Carl Lawson passed away from quite severe and aggressive cancer in 2012. But prior to that, he wanted to raise money for two reasons. One, to pay back the services that he'd used at Jones Padgett and at the Sandra Chapman Suite. But also, he wanted to set up a fund going forward that would help people. Because one thing he got trapped in was, there's no help.
No. If you haven't got money and you can't work, if you haven't got insurance, which let's face it, who has?
Not, with terminal cancer, you're not classed as disabled.
No, you're just fucked, mate.
You're just dying. And so, he very much saw this gap where people just need a little bit of food, a little bit of money to pay the electric and a few bits and pieces. So he set up this fund called Care and Real Love, Carl, after his name.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to put on a music day. And I remember me and Linz were sat at the Bell in Colton Colville just having a beer. And the phone rings and it's Jamos on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Linz answers it. They're chatting away. I'm not really paying any attention.
Mm.
And then kind of she turns to me and goes, right, they want to put a music event on. So because he'd said this, Jamos says, first of all, it was ring Linz, K-Fest. Do you know what I mean?
You guys have done it before. How do we do this?
Let's get this in. So I think we booked the first lineup, the day's lineup for the first day. And he was talking about doing it over the Jubilee weekend, 2012.
Right.
Ironically, which is obviously 10 years ago.
Wow.
So it was the 1st to the 5th of June.
Yeah.
Because the bank holiday had been moved later, K-Fest was actually on the 4th of June.
Oh, God.
No, it was the 3rd of June, sorry, 3rd of June. We were like, right, well, we can fit it around it. But that day, that one day, we kind of really need to be at K-Fest. So it was a festival of two parts. We done the first 3 days at the Mariners, Mariners Rest in Lowestoft.
Mm.
The fourth day was at K-Fest.
Right.
And then the fifth day was back at the Mariners.
Wow.
We still booked a band to play on that whilst we were playing at K-Fest. But,
how do these bands wrangle for slots then?
But yeah, this
how
was
does,
it.
How does the negotiation go?
It was very much a case of, when I was starting out and I was new, they almost tried to call the shots on me.
Wow.
Well, we need to pay higher up the bill.
They would be that blatant. You see, I've turned up at gigs where you know, we are further down the bill, and then you've got, and then you've, the organiser will go, oh, you'll have to play early, the other guys can't make it in time, and I always call bullshit because I am suspicious as hell.
if you've turned up, your set is your set. Do you know what I mean?
That's what I think.
If you don't, if you're going to leave a short notice,
so these guys would blatantly say,
I would have people say to me, yeah, if I say, right, you're at 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, no, we need a later slot than that.
Wow. And they and they would say, just we need it for because we're a better band, or
they wouldn't say, but and young band. And maybe a lack of confidence me would go, oh, okay then.
Not so much anymore, right?
And it used to be I'd get all my bands, then try and position them, and then they say no, and I go, oh, do you mind playing later, and do you mind playing earlier?
God.
And then whereas the last two or three have been so easy to organise because I'm quite blatant.
Yeah, yeah. I've got your slot, take it or leave it.
I've got an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Once it's in there, it's done, it's locked in, you know. Yeah. This is the slot. Do you want it or not? No, okay, I'll find another band. Because last year, and it's something I should have set up a long time ago, I set up an application process because I was, you know, it's 30 bands over 4 days.
See, I saw you done that, and I think this is an emerging trend that I've found for playing at festivals. And I mean, yours was fairly comprehensive. It was like, you know, link to video, contact on the day, stage requirements.
Yeah.
But I filled in one to play at a folk festival not too far from there.
Your star sign and stuff.
Oh my God. They wanted to know, one of them was, what does music mean to you?
What? Who cares?
It's like, write at least 100 words. It was like, what? Is this a school essay? And I got a gig.
I'd hope for a gig and a qualification.
I got a gig, and it's a 40-mile drive. And they paid me £20. I got to the thing and I said, well, how much am I getting paid? I went, £20. I went, just keep it. Just have it.
Yeah, it's not really worth it.
And I never applied. So
wait a minute, you asked how much you were getting paid when you got there?
Yes.
Didn't think to check that.
It was such a great festival, man. It's such like a, I mean, I won't name it, but it's such a high profile festival.
So to me, it sounds
like, oh, I just wanted it.
Sounds to me like why they put that question is to weed out the people who don't particularly want it.
I guess so.
It's more of a case of, are you going to put the effort in?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought of that. That's
to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Because the amount of it will whittle out. But at the same point, they're going to be whittling out some good bands.
There are, because
especially in the folk scene,
mm-hmm.
there's, I mean, some of them can't communicate when you're talking to them.
No, but they can sing a song with 32 verses in it.
Do you know what I mean? And the folk scene is one of those scenes that I'm terrified of. It's secondary to the jazz scene. They're weird.
It's because just beards and bright nylon shirts.
Yes, but there's an element of that I don't understand and it scares me.
Right, I think this, like you touched it, it's kind of like pop punk jukebox. Was that your band?
That was my band.
They were great, man. I do remember you being in that. Yeah. Because, and it's such a brilliant name, if I could say it properly. But I think we touched on something there with the folk scene and the jazz scene, and possibly the blues scene as well. And I have a lot of this because my blues heritage only goes so far. And there's only so many obscure blues artists I can name. And when I go to blues festivals, and I've been to quite a few over the year, and you kind of like, well, you know, that's not your thing. But it's supposed to be my thing, goddammit. I'm a blues artist, but, you know, my influences aren't always blues. And I say, oh, you sound just like so-and-so. And I'm like, who? You just feel automatically inferior that you don't have a vinyl collection that goes back to Sonny Boy Williamson the First or whatever.
Isn't it an elitist scene in many ways?
It does. I think it can come across that.
Blues, jazz.
I think it can come across that.
They can sometimes be like, well, if you don't understand, then you're clearly not clever enough to be part of the group.
Well, I think that, I think there's an element of that. I haven't found it with the folk scene, to be quite honest. I found the folk scene very welcoming. And I was in a folk band in the early 90s. And we did a lot of folk festivals, Cambridge, the whole lot. And they were very, very welcoming.
I think myself as a bit of a punk, but I haven't been welcomed quite so kindly into any fold. Even the punk fold.
Well, I think the local music scene fold loves you an awful lot for giving everybody a platform for their music.
Yeah.
And doing great things for charity, mate. I mean, that's something that people don't think about with that Carl stuff. I want to go back to that because I think it's incredible. And it's something that nobody thinks about. Well, who's gonna nip out to get the shopping if you can't literally get out of your chair? Well, as far as the Tories, nobody cares, mate. What you should do is get a better job, pays better insurance and have better stuff, shouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, should I? Well, Hannah, how am I supposed to do that? So I think it's one of the best, next to children's charities, like EACH, the East Anglia Children's Hospital. I think it's some of the best idea for a charitable institution I've ever heard.
We branched well away. I mean, we had that first Carl Fest in the June. We lost Carl in the August. Subsequent festivals organised on that August weekend that he passed away. Not because it was a weekend he passed away. It was a bank holiday weekend. That was the main... Yeah, he wanted it to be a four-day thing. We were like, well, you know, but it kind of was poignant and significant that it was that weekend. But the charity kind of grew outside of that and very much... led into helping people with anything and everything. It was a case of if you're being missed out by the major charities, by local authority, come to us, we'll see what we can do. And you know, nothing is more true than when the pandemic hit. The support we provided to people was pretty relentless, to be honest with you.
You did some great live streams for that as well, where people would donate. You're quite tech savvy with that kind of stuff.
It's well presented. It's the same as me designing posters. I don't know how to do this, and I wanted to. My other half, Donna, will tell you that she lost me for days because I found a bit of software I could live stream
from. Well, I think that takes a certain mindset of determination. You know,
it's curiosity. It's the same way when I do a lot of these shows. I do the sound engineering now. So at Carl Fest, the first couple, my dear friend Ian Williams done the sound, and he passed away, and it was like, I've got no one to do the sound. So I roped Chris Thurston in, who was starting to do a few sound.
His name keeps coming up with running sound at places. Well, yeah, he did stuff down the...
He's back in Lowestoft, so you should get him on. He's down for Jubilee weekend.
Fantastic,
so,
I'll hear him.
But no, so I kind of spoke to him, and then we had Glenn down at Ink Studios. Absolute lifesaver in so many ways, who started providing us some gear, and it was like there was points where we had no one to do the sound. And so I'd done a little bit when I was at the Standard, I'd done a little bit when I was doing these deliverance nights. I'll do the sound. I'll wing it. And I feel like now I can call myself, I mean, even to the point I had a band ring me today.
Yeah,
a band called The Big Cheese. They got a gig at the Grange in a couple of weeks time. They've bought this PA from the Standard.
Oh, have they? Really?
The old owner from the Standard, has sold them the PA. They video called me today going, how do we use this? I'm looking at it thinking, I haven't seen it for 10 years, mate.
You did the PA and supplied the PA for a whole, for the Bad Monkey Records night back in November, didn't you?
And
that desk was vast.
That was the Carlfest desk that we used. I taught myself how to sound engineer because the alternative was paying someone to sound engineer.
And if
you're running a charity event, paying someone means that...
Well, I know sound engineers would still take money because that's their job.
And that means that there's a family that aren't going to eat. Or there's someone who's not going to get their hospital transport. Or there's going to be a kid in the hospital without any toys.
Those kind of days. I mean, I do know guys that are sound engineers that will take money and say, well, it's my job. I've still got to eat.
I completely
get that. But surely there's something that with those days where it is kind of a bit make, do, and mend. So I don't think people mind if there's the odd little howl of feedback or if it's not a particularly slick show and stuff like that.
I pride myself on a relatively good sound now. I think I've done okay, and that is fully self-taught. I mean, I went to music college, didn't pay much attention, mainly drank and took drugs. It was music college. What else was I supposed to do? But something must have clicked, and so I did. I learned the sound engineering. So far, we've got a graphic designer and a sound engineer who has is through necessity. Live stream was necessity. I've got an Easter event planned that can't happen.
You don't give yourself enough credit for these things because there are people that say, you know, and how many band members, especially with the promo stuff, go, oh, I didn't know how to do that stuff and just shrug it off and leave it to somebody else. And but I guess you could have done that where you go, I could leave it to somebody else, but actually that spins the old grey matter.
That's it. I'm forever falling into rabbit holes. that I'm just like, well, how does that work? How can I do that? So, I set up the first lockdown in the April. We had Easter, we had the Carl's Easter Extravaganza, which has been going since 2016. So it's cancelled, it's not happening because of COVID.
Yeah.
Then it was about 2 weeks, about 7 or 8 days before the date it was supposed to happen. I was like, wonder if I could do a live stream. How would that work? And I was looking at it, it was far too complicated. Couldn't work it out. How was I going to get other people to be on this live stream? So everyone who was supposed to play, plus a couple of others, I rung them and went, can you just record a set on your phone? Rudimental, record it on your phone, send it to me, and I'll piece it together. And all I did was No, in fact, we scrapped that idea because a couple of them went, why don't I just go live? And I shared it. Yeah. It was just sharing other people's live streams.
Yeah, you say just. I mean, I, as part of a five-man team, organised an online three-day harmonica festival with 36 artists from around the globe. Now, that took months and months and months of planning. And, just share it from my page, just share it from here. But, yeah, like you say, that she did lose you for a few days and trying to work that shit out. Right?
But one of the best ones was when Ben Lever was playing, he'd forgot to set his live stream to public.
Right.
So I couldn't share it.
Oh,
no one could see it. So what
did
I did
he just
was...
plough on?
He was plowing on. He couldn't see that I was saying no one could see it. Yeah. So I then set up my webcam filming one of my computers whilst live streaming it on the other computer. And somehow it worked.
And somehow it looked like it was someone recorded the latest Marvel movie in a theatre in Russia.
There was some CGI.
Someone got up and walked to the toilet halfway through.
So that gave me the idea for Carlfest and thought, you know, it's supposed to be the 9th Carlfest 2020.
Mm.
What can we do? And that was when I started to get people filming and sending submissions. And then me and Patrick Thurston Brothers, always knew then there's never just one.
Love Paddy.
But he and me and him went to rehearsal spaces because the rehearsal spaces were open, the pubs weren't.
Yeah.
Well, they were, but I think it was very much
it was part of work, wasn't it? Because professional bands were still having to work.
Yeah.
So, and rehearse because that's their job and they couldn't let it go. So they had to, yeah.
So we went out, filmed a load of bands. Other bands filmed and done some pretty good jobs of it. Mm-hmm. Other bands didn't. and they then submitted everything to me. Me and Patrick then, well, he edited the videos, made them look good for kind of computer screens, edited an intro and an outro on them, and then we scheduled them, just scheduled posts. And then I was down at the Mariners where the event would have been held in between acts. I'd do some raffle bits and other bits and pieces. And so we ran a weekend festival via live stream. and we only took about $1,000 off the books of what we'd have earned at a live event.
Yeah, wow.
And then kind of the piece I'm actually proud of was by the next Easter, we ran an 8-hour live stream where everything was live, everything was stitched together.
I watched that
everything
one.
Was,
yeah.
And do you know what I mean? It was
fabulous.
Invited, you know, we were allowed 8 people or whatever in our garden, so I'd invited them around for a barbecue.
Yeah.
I was sat at my desk in the dining room just presenting this live stream, but still comparing it. And it was a phenomenal, phenomenal kind of event. And that one I'm particularly proud of because from the rudimental basics of the first to what we created. You know, by the
show
end of
must
it,
go on. It's total, like, you know, there's a great sort of can-do spirit to everything you seem to touch with these things. And that's what a local music scene needs, a driving force.
Yeah.
And you can't hold it all up by yourself all the time, can you?
No. And that's why, I mean, Carlfest last year was kind of my last Carlfest, the last big Carlfest. We're still doing a one day this year. It's going to be called Carl's Family Festival.
Yeah.
It's going to be more orientated towards families, the way it started out.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a one day down at the Mariners, and it's, you know, going to be a little bit more fun than the music festival vibe it got, because it got maybe probably a bit too busy to be a family festival.
it was down the end of the pier. There was thousands of people walking past in the height of summer.
Well, no, Carlfest I'm talking about.
Carlfest.
Even the garden at Carlfest can't hold as many people as I was trying to cram into it.
Although it was surprisingly big. When you say that stage set up in there, I was like, where's all this room come from? It was
brilliant. But so we're just doing, Carl's Family Fest is going to be a nice little kind of one day. But when I stepped away from the scene, obviously Ryan Redwood kind of stepped in and has organised a Falcon Fest, I think it's called.
Yes, he has.
And it's just nice to see that there's something going on.
Ryan's got a lot of energy. And
he's like a little bag of springs, isn't he?
He's fantastic. And, you know, I'm so glad that he started a little Facebook page about the Lowest Off music scene. He's promoting this podcast as well alongside his own.
Yes, of
and,
course, Indie Kids.
Yeah,
Indie
Kid he's going to go out on there. Yes, yeah, go out
but
there as
it
well.
It was lovely to see that kind of, like, this is no offence to the local scene, but there was a lot of years that I'd done that when there was nothing else going on.
No, it really
and
wasn't.
No one else really doing anything.
Nope. Do you think that? Why do you think that is? Do you think people just? My theory is that perhaps some people, there's a lot of like talking the thing like, it would be a good idea if someone organised an open mic. Well, why don't you organise?
There's two reasons. One, there's absolutely no money in it.
Mm.
There is no money to be made in it. The pubs are on their asses.
Yeah,
they can't.
You do have a great pub in the Mariners there, don't you? That guy, them guys love their music.
Sean and Leanne have been absolute godsends, and Sean and Gemma prior to that have been absolute. We couldn't have done it without them. Couldn't have made it what it was without them. You know, and that's a fantastic little boozer for that reason. That
great location, great size, you know, good old sawdust on the floor, serving ales kind of pub.
Yeah.
A great atmosphere of locals in there as well.
And if anyone goes to them and goes, I want to try and do this, they'll go, okay, let's see what we can do.
Yeah.
The Unity Centre, so that's the MenCap Unity Centre in town. Okay, they've got an event there on the 6th of August.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because they want to raise some money and they needed somewhere for an event. So they went to Sean and said, can we do this here? And he went, yeah, sure.
Amazing.
I mean, let me think, how much can I make of this? I'll charge you for the garden. He's like, sure, no problem.
And bands, bands always get free beers. Yeah. You know, lovely old job.
Yeah.
So what... Yeah, well, why do you think that people don't organise and do these things? Is it because they see you do it and go, God, he looks stressed?
I don't think I do. I look drunk most of the time. Anyone who sees me at Carlfest, there's a Jekyll and Hyde to me. It's like, oh, Darren's having a dance. And, oh, no, Darren's angry with someone. I hope it's not me. Like a little Jack Russell. But, no, I think that there is a lot of... The scene isn't what it used to be. The bands aren't what they used to be. And this is no offence to anyone who's on the
local scene. Are the bands... I know the scene I'm trying to get an impression of through these podcasts, but why do you think the bands aren't so much then?
The bands have had to tailor to what the pubs want and what the punters want.
Mm.
And back in the kind of early noughties when I first kind of got involved, it was original music and that's all we wanted. We wanted to hear new and different and, you know... That there wasn't the cover bands. There probably was, but I wasn't going to see them. I didn't care for them.
No, sure.
Nowadays, it's covers. It's something we know, something we can dance to, something we can sing along to.
Mm.
That's what people want more than, well, that's a bloody good original song. And what you've got to think is the youth are the driving force of the scene.
Yeah.
The youth will always be.
Yeah.
The youth have less disposable income than we had at that age
because
you can't work 3 jobs when you're 13 anymore. You know, I remember I used to work in a chip shop peeling potatoes, just cutting my hands open for 3 pence an hour. But I'd work every hour during the week so I could make 25 quid for a bottle of vodka, a bag of weed, and go down the brewery.
Not advocating teenage drinking.
But that was what we used to do, and we used to be able to earn our money to go and spend in that way. Mm. Kids nowadays can't earn money because you can't have a job at that age anymore.
No, that's true. When they do get a job, minimum wage, you know...
They've even stopped printing the Advertiser. You can't do that anymore.
Well, I've not seen one come through my door for years.
Advertiser, I think they've finished it now.
Have they?
They sent the Journal through for a couple of weeks and said, oh, here's some discount vouchers to buy the Journal.
Amazing.
But that was... I mean, the Advertiser, that's where we used to find out what gigs were going on.
Yeah, yeah, for band listings in there and all sorts.
Now, what it is, the attention span of people has dilapidated massively. People want a 3-minute TikTok video music consumption, not a 45-minute set of original songs
down at a local
pub where you have to pay.
O'Reilly's pub down the other top end of town, massive pub, a lovely bar. I used to play in there with the Harpoon Blues Band. Around sort of from 2004 onwards, and somewhere around that time, I think you're absolutely right, you know, there was a changing thing, because although we were a covers band, our songs were so obscure, everyone thought they were original, because no one had heard of any blues, but it would be a rotating door of people on their way down to the nightclub.
Yeah.
So literally, the girls would go up and dance, the boys would eye each other for a fight, and then they'd move on.
Yeah.
There was no young people coming there to watch the band, to get their fix of music.
No. And that's the thing, it did change. It was, you know, and unfortunately, a town such as Lowestoft didn't develop an underground scene almost. So you go to the cities and there's still that underground scene and there's a vibe.
Yeah, yeah, they have a lot of venues Lowestoft in Norwich, don't they? And to stuff have like underground. Student-y, isn't it, Norwich? It's like student bands, young bands. Yeah. You know, cutting their teeth and stuff like that. But yeah, we don't. There's not the demographic, is there?
There's not the demographic for it. There's not the money for it.
Mm.
And yeah, so the function band thrives, but the original music scene is dying and it's struggling.
I have to say, the last few gigs I've been to out and about, sort of you know, seeing bands is either 90s bands coming back where the audience is the same age as me or yourself, yeah. You know, we're between sort of mid-30s and mid-40s, and there's very few young people going to see young new bands. I couldn't even name you any. Do you know what I mean?
I'm quite into the pop punk scene, and so I Slam Dunk Festival is kind of my annual festival,
yeah.
Mainly because it's a one day.
Yeah.
So you know, I haven't got to do the camping or anything. I can get a hotel. I
fucking hate.
so for me, like the Slam Dunk Festival, I go to, and there is a great mix of new bands and old bands. So like Sum 41 are the headliners this year. Mm-hmm. So you know, to me, they're an old band because they're 20 years ago when I was growing up. That's who I was listening to. So like Sum 41, The Used, that sort of thing. And then they mixed it with some like Kenny Hoopla and these kind of new pop punk artists that are coming up through the ranks. And so you do get a real mix of people there. But then I'm on the Facebook group for the event, and all the oldies are kind of just sitting back watching the youngsters chat. And the youngsters are going, "So what's everyone wearing?" You're like, "Well, it's a festival. I'll wear the same jeans and T-shirt I wear every other day. But I won't wash them in advance or after." Last time I went, I came home with no shoes. Didn't bother me at all.
Brilliant.
They fell off during the Alkaline Trio pit. No. And I had to buy some new ones in Age UK the next day. We were staying in Hartford. I got some looks. Very well to do.
Hartford,
I guess. Yes, very well to do. But no, there's an Age UK with a decent pair of boots in it, so I got them for £8.
So what do you think is going to take, or is it even possible to sort of put a rocket up the arse of the local music scene? Is it going to I think it's going to take, you know, at least half dozen Ryan Redwoods.
No. Even with half dozen Ryan Redwoods, you haven't got the scene there.
So there's no young people coming along to watch these people and these bands, no?
Do you know where they are? Are they not allowed in the venues?
No, this is
This is a big thing. They're not allowed in the venues.
No, you can't even sneak in anymore.
You can't be in. Even if they're in not drinking.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Are you going
to
prove that?
They're not allowed to. I think there is still a scene to be had with the All Day.
Yeah.
And that is the only way. The charity All Day is the way to do it.
Yeah.
But no, I think if you look at it, the time it all fell apart, the time the local scene started to kind of fall back slightly.
The music died.
Exactly.
You cliche, you.
Well, no, it was when the internet took over music.
Really?
It was when we started consuming our music via the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It's become
actually.
And live streaming and COVID hasn't helped that because it became easy.
So I know you've gone back to vinyl. I've gone back to CDs. I've caught you walking out of charity shops with armfuls of vinyl.
Yeah.
Look at these, Donna.
look what I've got.
Look at that. Lovely, dear. You know, and yeah, I've gone back to CDs. I've even bought me a CD player for my birthday and stuff like that. Because I don't like streaming platforms. They only give me stuff that I don't want to fucking listen to.
So I love streaming platforms. We're very different now. That I can go on my Spotify on a Friday and my new music or a Release Radar playlist that they curate.
So you love music. I don't think I like music that much anymore. Especially talking to you. I think that you really, really love music in all forms, and I'm kind of like, I like what I know.
Yeah.
And I know what I like. You're bought my 90s albums.
I bet all of it is blues, folk, and jazz, and that's why.
It's mostly 90s indie rock, is what it is.
But no, to me, like my new Release Radar or new rock music or whatever playlists Spotify curate for me are. Yeah, it's an evening's journey for me. I'll sit and listen.
You genuinely find that stuff exciting. Right, good, though,
yeah. Part of it is because of Neil Jones at Smart Radio. I had to because I was running, I was presenting a new music radio
show.
Having
to curate stuff for your show. Yeah.
So I got kind of, you know, these rabbit holes that I speak of. I fell down them of what's this and what's that and what's the other. And to me, that is the thing. I appreciate my vinyl for when I want to listen to old shit. But sometimes I want to go, What's good now? And for me, like a Simple Plan.
I envy you that. Because I think that's an amazing thirst for, you know, for knowledge and stuff.
I mean, pop-punk is my genre. Pop-punk is where I kind of grew up with the Green Days and your Blink-182s, Sum 41s, Billy Talent, all that sort of thing. And then pop-punk was like reformatted and came out again a couple of years ago with Machine Gun Kelly and you know, and all these various other artists, Mod Sun and even Avril Lavigne, is it's not quite the same as it was.
Right. Was and it then, a bit shiny and a bit poppy? Is that
no,
what it was?
No, it was a bit rappy and a bit grimy.
Oh dear.
And it's like, well no, I like mine to be about I'm a teenager and no one likes me.
teenage dirtbag baby.
Like a teenage angst kind of stuff and like yeah. But do you know what I mean, that sort
do you
of stuff.
Still feel an affinity to that even though you're not clearly not a teenager anymore?
Apparently I do, because Simple Plan just released a new album last week and it is so the album is 30 minutes long, it's 10 songs, that's instantly pop punk format.
Right, yeah.
3 minute and it is so teenage angsty and it's all about heartbreak and but they're like 40 odd year old dudes from Canada.
You still know what heartbreak is about
but,
at that age,
but
right?
They're singing it from like the perspective of teenagers, do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't mention doing their jobs
and, perhaps that's what it is then, and perhaps you say like youth always drive the scene, perhaps it's not, perhaps it's middle aged men with arrested development
maybe but no, so I listen to that and think, yeah, there is still that. People still making that music. So I listen to new music for that reason, to capture a little bit of what I used to enjoy about new music.
Yeah.
You know, I think the problem is if you're only ever looking backwards, you might actually miss what's coming forward.
Well, there is that, but I'm still honestly discovering bands that all, you know, going back and listening to albums, because I found out I didn't listen to, you know, all of these people thoroughly. And literally listen to about two or three songs that I liked.
Yeah.
And then just skip the rest of the album. I'm going back and re-listening to the rest of the song going, oh, I didn't know they did this track.
That's an age thing, isn't it? It's an age thing. You listen to the hits. Yeah. Whereas now you're like, I just want something that you can put on. You don't want to have to keep skipping through. Just listen. And what you realise then is that these, and this is what is missing with streaming, where I agree with you, is the album.
Yes, that's an excellent point. I do like a whole album. And my mate had a theory that track 7 on any album, and I encourage people to say, track 7 is no. quite the opposite.
Oh, so and it's normally unreleased, isn't
Matt Coe's theory was that track 1 is going to be excitement and drag you into the thing, and then at the end, obviously, they're going to tail off, and you know, there's going to be a bit of a lull around 3 or 4 where they've built you up.
We'll put the little ballady bit
track
in.
Track 7 was one that maybe might have been enough, or maybe a bit of thriller, but it was always a bit of a chance.
It was, yeah, and it was never like that, never a single, never a released song.
No.
And the reason I'm saying, Deadbeat Holiday, track 7 off Green Day's Warning, 2001, is an absolute phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah.
So the theory is already...
Instantly, I'm now going to go and listen to everything I've got and find out what track 7 is. I think I love that song just because the opening lyrics are, wake up, the house is on fire and the cat's caught in the dryer. And that just stuck with like little 12-year-old me. And But no, that song is phenomenal. So I'm gonna test your theory.
Test that theory on that.
Genuinely am. But no, the album isn't curated in the same way. Blink-182 released their 9th album called 9. And they said that chances are this will be the last album they release. They'll just release songs from now on.
A lot of artists just do. And
that's
a lot
how
of,
the consumer wants
it. Yeah, and a lot of marketing advice on these music sites is to only do singles and EPs. And when I released albums, because I'm on my 3rd one now, people go, well, what are you doing all those for? Well, the blues genre kind of demands that. I mean, I first sent out, I recorded a single with old Neil from the... Harping Blues Band. We did one song and sent it to some radio stations, and they went, well, where's the rest of it kind of thing. So since then I've been releasing whole albums, and also I am able, because of my home studio and because of the time I've got, I am able to create all those songs.
And they're
easy and simple. but I think that like there's a long, like you say about curating the album, I go to great pains to think of the running track order listing of the track list.
And then the physical album itself.
Yeah.
What images are we using? And what... Because you know, didn't you get a local art? You got Justin Peach, wasn't it, to do... Didn't he do your harmonica painting?
Yes, he did. Yes. Yeah, there's
you
the original painting.
You were looking at me then like
original
I was talking absolute nonsense.
I thought you meant John for a minute there. I thought, John? No, I did. Because I did John's album cover
for
him.
Yeah, but Justin done...
Justin did that. There's the painting up there, the original painting.
There we go.
Yeah, for Invisible Prison.
I thought I got it completely wrong then. You're looking at me. I'm like,
it's me with my senility. But yeah, and but it's fabulous.
Do you know what I mean? So you actually went to a local artist and went, can you paint this? And that's your album cover.
Yeah.
And that's what's lost, because what I see a lot now is... people make a TikTok video of their latest track, and you get like the first verse of the track, and you go, "Oh, that's all right, that's okay. Yeah, it'll be released in 3 months' time." And but no, I don't like you enough to go to Spotify to even listen to it, let alone buy a record from you.
Do you think it seems a bit lazy to me? It sounds like it's a bit lazy. Yeah,
the industry is.
It's a bit kind of like, well, I've done one mic drop. I could be famous now. Let the millions roll in.
It's this viral fame.
Viral fame. Yeah, I don't want to be known ever be as a flash in a pan, and to, you know, that wish never came true.
Well, but, no, you were. Little Blue Peter springs to mind, but
freaking Blue Peter, Jesus,
old Anthea, and putting, what was it?
My organ in her mouth.
Yeah,
yes. My mate Paul says that every single time. Anytime we introduce me to anybody, this is Paul. Abbie Turner sucked his organ. No, I taught her to play in a mouth organ on TV. It's very. Very different.
No, I think you should stop explaining it and just take it. But no, so you know, you were viral before viral was a thing.
The great thing about doing all that crap when I was young is that nobody's seen it. And if I hadn't put it on YouTube,
I was going to say you share it a lot for someone who isn't proud of it.
Well, you know, what can I say? Well, do you know what my main thing is? And I'm going to disclose a little secret here. There is a harmonica player, a very famous British harmonica player, who was on a kids' TV show. For like 2 seconds and didn't even, you know, speak or was interviewed or nothing. He was on it for like bloody 2 seconds not so long ago. And every time that he is introduced, oh, he was on this TV show. And I'm like, well, hang on a minute.
So was I.
Yes.
Anthea. Remember Anthea?
And I spoke and everything. Look at me. And I was younger than him.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So purely childish, vindictive reasons, because that's how I roll.
Man of decorum, of course. But no, so the viral thing and the flash in the pan element, people don't want to work for it anymore. So things like organising a music event. If you come to the Seabreeze in 2007, 2008, when I was putting on Deliverance, you would not have seen a polished show with a full capacity crowd that everyone's enjoying themselves. You'd have seen bands not showing up. Mm. You'd have seen equipment breaking. You'd have seen people not turning up. So days when there was like five or six people there. And so most people go, well, it's not worth doing anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what I like about just that description there is that it was kind of make do and mend. It was makeshift. It was real.
Everything's been makeshift.
Well, absolutely. I've seen the TikTok videos that you're talking about. I tried it for a little while and thought, fuck this. And the TikTok videos you're about are very, very polished.
Yes.
And it's like, it's almost like no one wants to fail or to put out something that's kind of shit or half-assed, do they? What's wrong with sucking? I don't see buying a cheap guitar, buying a cheap amp and just rocking your socks off and just sucking ass.
I had a great night a few months ago. So Trig in C327 asked me to DJ their comeback show at Football Town Club. I knew what sort of thing he wanted. He wanted the Spirals vibe from Blue Notes, the old nightclub in Lowestoft. He wanted that sort of vibe. So I used to DJ for Spirals.
Did you?
So yeah, in the second wave.
I
love
the Spiral. I was only around for the first wave. The Spiral, for those that don't know, was a club night at our local, the Claremont Pier. There's a pier that had a nightclub above it, and they played on the last Thursday of the month or last Friday of the month, they played indie rock bands. So during the 90s, Blur's new single would get played up there. Yeah. You know, Oasis' new single, any of those, they played Pearl Jam and everyone went mosh and shit. It was great. So you were DJing second wave.
Later in the noughties. So I went through my hard drive, which I'd saved all this music on, which I'd clearly purchased and not downloaded from BearShare or LimeWire.
Absolutely not, no.
So, I had thousands and thousands of tracks. I thought, I need to get that music. So, because I was downloading some more current stuff and making sure I had some more update, but I was like, if we're going to do that vibe, I need to get this hard drive. So I dug this hard drive out, and I found a folder called Vince Steger. Now, my stage name when I was in a punk band was Vince, because I used to wear white cowboy boots and a bouffant hair like Vince Noir off Mighty Boosh.
Okay.
So Vince Steger was my solo project. I was like 17, and these tracks were absolutely awful. But there was elements.
This is you playing guitar and singing?
Just playing guitar and singing.
Fantastic, I need to hear
this. And this was not into anything other than, you remember when you first had a microphone on your computer, the little stick?
Oh yeah, I remember the ancient days of microphone into computer. Mate, I was telling people about you don't even know what a Fostex 4-track is, I suppose, do you? No little analog 4/4 track.
No.
Or literally, like, and the first, my first harmonica songs were recorded on one of those. You ever seen those long tape recorders that have a speaker in them as well?
Yes.
There's a speaker, built-in speaker, yeah. Bigger microphone, and they're sort of about a foot long and about 6 inches wide.
Yeah.
And they've got a big thing on them. I recorded like loads of harmonica songs on one of those.
Wow.
So don't give me a microphone into a computer.
It's like 6:30. You need to be going to sleep or something. 7:30. You need. Is it nap time now?
We've got two naps by now, buddy. But anyway, for you, I've got to understand that from your perspective, that was early technology.
This was 2005.
Yeah, sure. Computers weren't a great speed. The recording quality of the microphones weren't great either.
It was, so it's rudimental. And my singing was, I was shouting in a punk band.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't singing. And this was my first time. And I look back and listen to that and think, I have improved a hell of a lot, but there's a sense of pride in how awful it was.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like, no, I've come from somewhere.
It's okay. Whereas these artists, I think it's okay to be shit.
Yeah.
I think it really is. And I'll tell you what I do love about social media, and I don't like an awful lot about it, is I like watching people's journeys.
Yes.
I like watching Peter Bodd's, first couple of songs are a bit, he's joining a band. Ooh, actually, And I love being part of that.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, that's the same as... Now, Daniel Stacey is a prime example of this. You know Daniel Stacey?
Of course I do. I love the band. He's an exceptional drummer. Yeah, he's lovely.
But the first band he was in was called the Band of Leeds. And they played a Carl Fest, maybe the first one.
Mm.
And it was, they were very much, I've got no one else that's going to play this slot. They were awful.
I've heard his. His original, his sort of journey. That was basically playing in his garage and stuff like that, and he didn't have a clue. Really,
he was very, very unaware of time signatures, and the whole band themselves. It was. And this is no offence, Daniel. I love you. I think you're an amazing drummer.
Sure.
But that first performance we saw, there was a few of us that stood in the pub and went, what have we done?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're going to lose people here. People are going to go, and we're not going to raise any money because of this band. But his journey...
I'm taking a piss.
His journey, and that whole band's journey, the individual members of it, that was their first project. And I look back to, when I found this hard drive, I think I shared it. It was on my birthday. I shared a video of my first gig.
Yeah.
When I think I was 19, and my punk band played at a high school, Litcham High School, somewhere near Dereham.
Right.
Like, I mean, it was not an appropriate set for 13 to 15-year-olds.
Yeah.
I was paralytic drunk in a high school, screaming down a microphone. And it's shocking. But I share it when I see it, when it comes up on my memories. I share it because that's my first gig. That's where I came from.
Well, I've gone through the same sort of... and it's almost therapeutic for me, whereby I had a bunch of old VHS cassettes of gigs I'd done in town halls and crap like that, harmonica festivals, from like my early teenage years, and put them up online. And you know what? My harmonica band, when I was 11, 12... we were pretty crap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chord players changing chords at the wrong point. My brother played bass and he was on a different time signature whatsoever. I could barely play one single note at a time. But I share that video and I'm very proud of it. Because look at me, I'm 11 years old on a stage playing May Forgan.
Well,
and
it.
Yeah, I am shit and I don't care. But that's where I started.
And this is where you've come from. And so, like I say, there is that
and
journey.
And I'll learn to play properly one day.
There's always a chance. just stick to the podcast.
But there's no...
Don't give up the day job.
Absolutely. Too right. There you go. But there's no... I don't think there's any shame in sucking ass big style on your instrument to start off with, is there?
I still can't play guitar. I do, regularly.
Yeah, do I do some lessons or anything? I've started taking guitar lessons.
I took
lessons,
guitar
you know?
Lessons off Matt Down when I was
good teacher.
I was about 17, I think. I took guitar lessons off him.
Mm.
Only for about 6 months. And then I was like, right, I know everything I need to know.
I got C, A, and I got D. And
I went to music college and they tried to teach me jazz chords. Mm. Chords. Jazz chords.
Well, that's why you got them wrong there. You were trying to look at fish and they were saying...
just playing jazz.
You're blowing in the wrong end, boy.
But no, so he tried to teach me jazz chords, and I was like, I'm not doing this. So I had to drop that unit because I wouldn't pass music college because the only thing he wanted to teach was jazz, and that was it. And I was like, well, I'm playing punk songs and rock songs. So they were like, well, you can do music journalism instead,
which
I'm quite glad I did because it actually kind of reached into my more academic side.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I'm very basic at guitar. I'm very self-taught.
Yeah.
And but that means that I don't play everything perfectly. I don't play everything right. And sometimes it sounds good. Sometimes it doesn't.
Sometimes it really doesn't. But
but yeah,
I think not being afraid of failure is the main one, isn't it? And I always say, well, what's the worst that can happen, really? Yeah. You know, and you know, you feel as everyone's going to leave and no one's going to pay, which was never not going to happen because people give because it's a charity, and because probably Dan a lot of time, and he's still an incredibly young man now.
Yes,
you know, and so he must have been an absolute child at that time.
Yeah, I think
and
he was like,
the very fact
like
that he even got up
15, 16.
But he's an exceptional drummer now. And I mean, Danny is one of those drummers that just like you can hear the entire song. By just listening to the drum track, you can hear the lyrics, you can hear the turnarounds for the phrases, the ends of phrases, you know.
And that's rhythm, that is proper
it's
rhythm.
It's really deep.
With
punctuation
in it.
And he's one of the best listeners as a drummer that I've ever, you know, had the fortune to work with.
I think that I've never worked with him as a drummer, only as an organiser or a sound tech. But what strikes me, and this is the thing, the best musicians that I've worked with, the nicest, is the ones without the ego.
Yes.
And with him, he's got no ego. So if there isn't need for him to be playing drums, he won't be playing drums.
Yeah, giving himself up to the song. What does the song want? That was always his philosophy when I worked with him, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in bands where the drummer needs to be heard all the time, even when we're talking between songs.
Yeah.
Or tuning or doing anything that involves not playing drums, the drummer will be playing drums.
I just remember one particular band I'd rehearsed with, and every time you opened your mouth, drums seemed to come out of them. It's like, why
am I eating a snack?
Yeah,
what the hell?
So, mate, I just want to it's been hilarious, one of the funniest ones ever. I wanted to ask, can you give me one absolutely single best moment of organising all those festivals, and one that's probably not necessarily even the most miserable, but one of the probably the one that like probably most cringy and kind of worst moment of make you go ooh.
So what you've actually done there, I don't know if you had this question written down in advance, because I did say
might
to you before we started this that my memory of names, places and events
I'd rather you didn't give names and places and events and was a bit more general about the thing, of the feeling of the memory.
But I can't remember it.
Who's the best band you've ever had on there? Have you had any big names?
No.
No big names.
We had Millie Manders play at Cullfest.
Oh, yeah, cool.
But before Millie Manders and the Shut Up.
So who's been your absolute favourite band? Personal favourite. You can play favourites. You run charitable things. You can pick out who you like.
For me, there was this moment when a band called Powerhouse played. Chris Priest. He was on The Voice. He sung like something from the Aladdin.
Oh, really? Okay.
And you'll see him busking in Nigel time. It was in a band called Powerhouse.
Yeah.
And no one had ever heard of him. I'd never heard of him. I'd seen some videos online. I messaged him, do you want to play Cullfest? Do you want a headline on the Friday night?
Local boy in Norwich?
Norwich based. Mm. And they turned up. And I remember this because they turned up for the day.
Right.
They were playing for an hour at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
And they turned up for the day.
Good old boys.
And they played and they're phenomenal. He was rolling around on the floor playing guitar solos and stuff. And it was all covers.
Yeah.
But it was... And for me, it was an ego boost because everyone came up to me afterwards and I'm like, who the hell is that?
Awesome.
Who? And then I never managed to book him again because they kind of blew up a little bit as a band.
Yeah.
And then obviously he went on The Voice and started doing his solo kind of stuff. And yeah, so that was a big moment for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I think the worst moment that springs to mind was Cullfest 2018. On the Sunday, I'd grown my hair for 3 years.
Yeah.
It was quite long.
Uh-huh.
And I was getting it cut off for charity. And this was the day it was going to happen. And I decided I was going to open that day.
Right. Doing a little solo acoustic bit.
Yeah, the solo acoustic bit. Yeah, just cool, playing with Jamie T covers and various covers. And it pissed it down. Everyone went indoors. Two or three people stood in the beer tent with the intent purpose of heckling. And I'm stood there with my hair braided into these thick plaits in order to have it cut later. With a pissing down of rain, most of the equipment's covered up by tarps, and I'm standing there playing my guitar to no one at Cullfest.
Yeah.
That has got to be...
That's a low point musically, career-wise.
I mean, there's been a lot of them. But that is one that sticks in my mind.
It is.
You should have just not played them. No one would have minded.
I played. There was one I didn't want to, I kind of wish I hadn't played because I did such a terrible job. And actually, my photo ended up being in a paper. It was 2017 Carfest. I was so hung. I was
they
so
used that photo over. For like 3 years.
I
know,
and I could barely speak or stand. I can't even remember where I'd been the night before.
You weren't
before.
Even playing. The photographer just went, "Oh, just stand there," because he saw you with a guitar.
Oh,
and just God. Stand there, and
I
you went.
So I literally slept in that t-shirt. I think I was so done in, and yeah, and then and then you'd cut it out of the paper and put it on the wall of the pub for the next 5 years as well.
Was like, that was God, the stock Carlfest photo. You and Heidi Golder.
Well, Heidi looked great. I looked
she had her stock photo for a few years. That every year they just pulled out this photo of Heidi. And then you replaced her, I think, for a little while. You were the stock photo.
Well, Darren, we've got to the end of our time, and mate, I really, really appreciate you coming out and spending your time. And thanks for all you do for the local music scene, mate. What's next? Obviously, we've got the Jubilee Day down at the Mariners.
Yeah. There's going to be Carl's kind of one day, and then I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I hope to get back on Smart Radio at some point. It's just kind of time.
It's a great show. You've really got a natural feel for that. I remember texting you during your first or second show and going, "Hey, natural flow on that." Well, you love your music, and it's not difficult when you love your music, is it?
And my problem is, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it properly. And so I don't. If I'm producing a show, I want to spend some time on it. I don't want to just half-ass it. And so it's just finding the time. But no, I don't know what I'm going to do next. There's some kind of jam sessions and things I'm playing about in. Some events and some sound engineering. But
cool.
As for the future,
keeping it loose.
We'll see what happens.
Good man. Well, thank you ever so much. And we'll be keeping our eyes peeled for what you do soon. Thanks ever so much, mate.
Thank you.